Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Hardworking and dependable. Test drive a Silverado at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
We bring in Anna DeVlantis for this week in Chicago history, and we'll start this morning with a little Cicero history. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, Bob. Yeah, this week, a federal grand jury, as you'll recall, delivered a verdict that closed one of the most colorful chapters in the history of one of the most colorful towns in the Chicago area, Cicero. Betty Lauren Maltese was convicted this week, 2002, of racketeering, conspiracy for fraud. The feds say that she helped loot $12 million from the town, and she was the town president, and she was responsible, they said. Cicero, of course, has this long-standing, well, this history of Fed investigations and known as a mob town. Even Al Capone himself was known to spend a lot of time there. But here's what the Fed say they were doing. This is really pretty crazy and also extremely wrong, as you can tell. They built this unlicensed insurance company, and they were using it to handle the health care claims for Cicero's employees. But instead, they were funneling millions of dollars to things like a mob-backed casino they wanted to build, all these luxury goods and fancy cars, a horse farm, all kinds of things the town had no business being involved in and really didn't benefit from. So they it brought down the downfall of Betty Lauren Maltese. But even after serving her time, Bob, interesting to note, she always maintained her innocence. Here she is talking about it later, after she served her time, and she was in a radio appearance. We pulled a clip.
The Cliff Kelly show there in WVON. Mm. She never disputed that there was fraud and wrongdoing in Cicero, right?
Not at all, Bob. It is a really fascinating case, legal case, if you think about it. The feds never proved that she knew about it. They never proved that she was actively involved in the fraud. They held her accountable because they said she should have known about it, and that was enough for her to serve nearly 8 years in prison.
This week in 1982, the future of night games at Wrigley Field was in doubt, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know you've talked about this on your show a bit, but this particular piece, I think, is just so interesting to revisit in our history, Bob. James R. Thompson signed a law this week, 1982, that seemed at the time to just drive a nail into the coffin of all hopes for night games and lights at Wrigley Field. It was devastating for the Chicago Cubs. Remember, at this time, the Tribune Company had just taken over. They had their top brass working hard on this detailed proposal for lights at Wrigley. And so finally, their team could have night games like every other team in Major League Baseball. Lots of opposition, though, Bob, as you will recall very well. Wrigleyville neighbors organized these powerful lobbying groups. Citizens United for Baseball and Sunshine came out. The traffic, the noise, the disruption, we don't want any of it. And then came really the death shot from Governor Thompson, or what seemed like at the time, August 23rd, 1982, a big legislative move designed to target the Cubs. I think you can, that's pretty clear. Recall that he amended the Illinois Environmental Protection Act to add that professional sporting events in cities of more than 1 million people holding games in stadiums that had never hosted night games before July 1st, 1982, generating noise above 45 decibels would now be a violation of state law. Obviously targeting the Cubs. I mean, you could generate 45 decibels of noise with a refrigerator hum. There was no way you were going to get the Cubs to hold a night game and not be a violation of that law. So lots of lawsuits, and ultimately, we know, it took 6 years, but the team eventually got their life.
Yes, they did. Well, let's see. It's, 9 years ago this week that Tom Skilling was really verklempt. Wasn't he?
One of my favorite TV moments of all time, Bob. I just is. Oh, my gosh. I just get so emotional thinking about it. 2017, Carbondale, Illinois, when the path of the solar eclipse totality path was coming right through there, and Tom Skilling went down there to report for us. And, we just trust Tom for everything, and we're so excited about this rare earth phenomenon. But it was so fascinating how emotional he got when it happened. You know, the moon sort of covered the sun, and the sky turned to twilight, and the stars appear in the middle of the day. And Tom Skilling looked up at that, and the guy who had led us through life-threatening...
Oops, there goes Anna's line. We'll get her back in a minute, but let's listen to what happened when Tom was looking up at the sky. And it happened again, didn't it, Anna?
He came back. He came out of retirement, Bob, just to do it again, right in just about the same zip code, right there. And he was, I think, almost emotional the second time. So the next one, Bob, is 2099. So mark your calendars for that one.
Yeah.
I hope, God willing, Tom Skilling will still be with us.
Oh, man. Yeah. 2017 and then 2024. Tom did it again. More This Week in Chicago History coming up. This was the week in 1965. The Beatles were in town. Hannah?
Yeah, they landed at Midway Airport. They played back-to-back shows, Bob, concerts at Comiskey. They actually put up a plywood stage over second base, and they played two shows there, afternoon and evening. All the local media reports at that time, if you go back and look at them, Bob, describe, of course, the intensity of Beatlemania. It was sweeping the country. But then they also talked about how loud the screaming fans were at Comiskey, so loud it was impossible to hear the music. The Tribune critic was griping about that. You couldn't tell what they were even singing. After the shows, John Lennon was asked about the screaming fans, how loud they were, and did it bother him? And he said, they paid good money to get in here. They should scream as much as they want. There was a great press conference that day at Comiskey, and we pulled a clip from it. All the Beatles lined up to talk to the media. August 20th, 1965.
That's Ringo there. Yeah, tickets were what, $5.50? For the show?
$5.50, which mm-hmm. maybe even, I think even in today's dollars, doesn't transfer into one Taylor Swift ticket. So.
No.
Yeah.
And,
it was.
And I think they performed for about 45 minutes. Nobody could hear anything. And supposedly, anything. The story goes that they went to Margie's Candies in Bucktown after the show, right?
They have pictures of it. Bob, Margie's is still there, as you know, right there in Bucktown. And they gave an impromptu performance. They stood up on the tables and started singing to the diner. I mean, just, I can't even imagine what it would have been like.
Does anybody remember Chicago Fest anymore?
No, I know you do, Bob. Didn't you, like, MC a bunch of stuff and, like, host some events there or something?
Well, I remember, when I first came to Channel 2, I remember doing live shots from Chicago Fest, starting in the first summer that it took place.
Yeah, 1983 is when it ended. Six summers in a row, it became like, it defined summer in Chicago because everyone looked forward to it. And it wasn't just concerts, it was so much more. People who weren't there at the time will find it interesting to know that it had not just music, but a roller disco, a pinball arcade. They had children's stages, a variety show. They had laser light shows and fireworks and a movie theater and 100 local food vendors. They even had live broadcasts of the Bozo Show from Chicago Fest. It was this huge deal, and if you think about it, it was the first all-city family fest, this big open-air summer party held on the lakefront, and it kind of morphed into the Taste of Chicago over the years. So best $3.50 you could spend. That's what it cost to get in that one back in the day. So
yeah, Navy Pier at first, and then it moved to Soldier Field, right?
Yeah, the very final year, that's where it was, Soldier Field. And then it's just kind of a bunch of different things, some disagreements with the city kind of went away.
And finally, I wonder if anyone remembers this story about Michael Jordan, Anna.
I didn't, and I looked at it, and I was like, wow, I forgot. Now I kind of recall that happened. Michael Jordan sued Dominick's grocery store. This week, 2015, the verdict was announced. He had sued Dominick's for using his image and likeness without his permission. And you may have thought it might have been a friendly gesture, or like a hometown pride kind of thing, because Dominick's put a full-page ad in Sports Illustrated. It was the edition devoted to Michael Jordan, and they put a silhouette of a guy that looked a lot like Michael wearing a black and red jersey with a number 23 on it, and underneath it said, Michael Jordan, you are a cut above, and underneath that it said, try Rancher's Reserve Beefsteak, and then there was a $2 off coupon. Well, Michael didn't really like that whole thing, you know, the whole affiliation with the beefsteak and the fact that he didn't endorse it, and, you know, it was just kind of using his image, so a jury awarded him $9 million. He donated it to charity, and that was the award. Remember the days, Bob, though, when the Bulls and the Bears would do, like, a local car wash or a car dealership or a Subway sandwich joint? They'd be like, yeah, this is the best Subway sandwich. This was Michael was much bigger than that at this point. He was getting $10 million plus per deal, and he's like, uh-uh, I got to defend my brand. So,
yeah, sorry. I remember when my dad was getting Chicago Bears glasses at gas stations.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot
like,
of that.
He, like, Hampton on it or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. This week in Chicago history, more next Wednesday. Anna, thank you. Have a good one.
Of course.